Welcome to the Commercial Investing Show, where we analyze, explain, and exploit the opportunities presented in today's commercial property marketplace. If you're interested in apartments, mobile home parks, self-storage facilities, and other income property, you've come to the right place. We'll explore what's hot and what's not in markets nationwide in the relentless pursuit of return on investment. Here's your host, Jason Hartman.
Welcome to the Commercial Investing Show. This is your host, Jason Hartman, where we discuss the relentless pursuit of ROI. Yes, that's right, return on investment and return on inflation. We have a changing future with monetary policy and fiscal policy the way it is, and we need to prepare for it as investors by structuring our transactions differently, and we will talk about that on this episode and future episodes, of course. So we will be back with a fantastic interview for you and a guest today in just less than 60 seconds. Stay tuned.
Are you ready to begin making huge profits in mobile homes and mobile home parks? If so, check out Mobile Home University's Boot Camp in a Box. You'll learn how to find and evaluate mobile homes and mobile home parks, how to drastically reduce park expenses, how to develop an effective management team, how to market and advertise to fill up your park, and much more. The Mobile Home University Boot Camp in a Box is available at special savings at jasonhartman.com.
It's my pleasure to welcome Jeff Cronrod to the show. Jeff will be talking to us today in two capacities. One is a board member for the American Apartment Owners Association, and also as the enforcer, who has got vast experience in collections. So you want to make sure you don't have deadbeat tenants out there, make sure you screen them well, and you'll learn a lot from Jeff today on that subject. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jason.
Let's talk a little bit about the landscape of the apartment world and the income property world, if we can. Based on your experience and your knowledge, what areas around the United States look prime for good investments nowadays?
There's several parts throughout the country. Certainly the Southeast has been looking very strong. There's a lot of opportunity, especially perhaps in Florida. We're seeing some in Las Vegas. Some parts of even California, I'm seeing some opportunity, maybe with single family or smaller buildings that'll be coming up soon. There's probably pockets all throughout the country that are experiencing some opportunity in terms of lower prices, higher cap rates. Some of it may be a problem in terms of financing, of course, but I guess that's a different subject.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, now that prices are softening a bit, that creates a lot of opportunity for investors. And you know, Jeff, the demographics coming at the apartment owning world from the landlord side now look pretty darn good. I mean, Generation Y is entering their prime renting years, and it looks like for the next decade or so, we've got a pretty good demographic coming at the apartment world. Would you agree with that?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
It's all part of the change that we're seeing.
How are owners preparing for that or adjusting to that?
Well, again, it's going to vary. We're seeing all sorts of issues. The American Apartment Association caters to a lot of folks that are smaller landlords. They might own just a home or a couple single-family homes, and they certainly have their share of issues right now, both in terms of shifting demographic as well as a greater loss of liquidity perhaps than they thought they'd have, inability to refi out, that kind of thing. So that's causing a little more grief. We're hearing through the American Apartment Owners Association, we're hearing some of those issues. But all in all, I think that they're recognizing that there's some opportunities there as well, some right in their own backyard. We have some owners asking more and more about, some of our members asking more about, learning more about foreclosure, how to buy them, not how to stay out of them. And they're recognizing those sorts of opportunities.
So you have about 140,000 members, I believe, in your association. Are those members concentrated in any certain area? Or are those members sort of investing in any certain area? You may not even know this. I'm not sure, but I just thought I'd throw the question out there.
Well, I know that our demographics on our membership is pretty much similar to the general population, in as much as the New York, California, Florida, Texas, the more populated states, we have more members. But we also know that most of our members tend to invest close to home, wherever they live. Not all of them, certainly. They tend to feel more comfortable investing in a property that's in their city or close by. A lot of them are very hands-on management. folks that drive over to the property regularly, collect the rents, do the repairs themselves. They're real roll-up-the-sleeves kind of people and get it done. Not all of them, but we see that a lot.
Yeah, this is the landlord who's out there painting their building in between tenants. You know, they've got the, maybe they've rented the carpet steamer. They probably own one, and they're cleaning the carpets and stuff like that. What would you say, though, for people that are looking to diversify? I mean, if they live in the right area, I think that's excellent advice. But maybe they live in a market that's really overvalued, still falling in value. What I want to actually get to also, Jeff, is since you're in the business, your daytime business is the collection and screening business, maybe you have some knowledge of where the better and inferior quality tenants are.
We always want to be careful. I mean, every town has their good and bad areas, and the key really there is to properly screen. There isn't any particular city, I think, that you want to avoid. You want to really make sure you're diligent in your screening effort, and we forever are dealing with landlords that are just learning the business, that don't understand the value of properly screening a tenant, and spending a few dollars up front can save you thousands, if not tens of thousands later, in lost rent and attorney's fees to try to get somebody out that you just didn't do your best in checking out to begin with.
Okay,
so we really emphasize tenant screening is very important.
Yeah, very good point. So since we're on that subject, let's talk about it. I got a few more questions for you on the general market and the financing
sure.
outlook and so forth. But tell us about screening. I mean, how does a landlord properly screen, or how do they get their property manager to properly screen people? What are the different sort of levels of screening?
Well, that's a show unto itself, Jason. Let me skinny it up for you. We offer tenant screening, of course, through the American Apartment Owners Association. We also have a company called Tenant Alert that also offers tenant screening. And at both levels, the minimum we would always recommend is to get a credit report on the prospective tenant. But in addition to that, you can get landlord, tenant, and eviction records to get their history as to how good a tenant they've been in the past. And even we encourage them to run criminal background reports. Criminal background check can be real helpful, especially if there's issues of drug abuse or domestic violence or even any sort of vandalism to property. All that's really helpful in knowing who you're renting. The more information you have going in, the better you're going to be at keeping the right people in the building and protecting your property. Beyond that, you really want to spend some time training your managers as to be intuitive, to look at the application and sort of be a detective. I mean, I could tell you stories for days about things that people get away with. And people with bad credit, for example, might use their child's Social Security number because they know that they won't be able to pass, and they might use the Social Security number of a 3 or 4 year old child. It's pretty simple for a manager to see these things and check them out. We get a lot of fake IDs, a lot of fake driver's license being used. And again, all these things are easy to check out, but they have to be somewhat intuitive and curious. Sometimes managers are a little too anxious to please the owner and just get that apartment rented and tend to not be real thorough. So it's important that they do that. The other thing we always encourage people to do is ask for the previous month's rent receipt as opposed to calling the prior landlord. If you call the prior landlord and the tenant's not a great tenant, the landlord may not be real forthright. He may not be honest because he's anxious for that guy to leave. But if you ask for a copy of the rent receipt, at least you know they're current. Because eviction data that we're pulling may not be totally up to date. So if somebody's just a week or two up behind, you're going to want to know that. So we'll always ask for a most current rent receipt. And there's lots of other things. You want to see a copy of their W-2 form, confirm they really do work where they say they're going to work, confirm they really bank where they say they bank, and so on. So there's a whole checklist that we give out to our members, the American Apartment Owners Association, know how to do that.
We have an annual educational event, and we just wrapped it up yesterday, actually. I'm sorry, not annual, semi-annual. It's called the Master's Weekend, and one of our speakers there talked about identity theft and how people rent properties under assumed names with fake IDs. And how do you detect this type of thing? Is it a matter of matching up the documents? Is it a matter of looking more closely at their driver's license to make sure it's not a fake driver's license? Or is it all things?
Again, being intuitive, we call it cross-checking documents. One of the things we encourage our members to do is always run what we call a previous address history. And so if the applicant, and basically it'll go up to 10 years back into all their addresses. And so if the applicant has had 5 addresses and they're all in the state of California, but the Social Security number that they're providing indicates that they're from Idaho, that's a big red flag. the first three digits of every Social Security number tells you what state it came from. And so that's a very simple cross-check. Or if they give you a driver's license from Wyoming and their Social Security number is from Idaho and their address history is California, another red flag. I mean, it's a matter of there should be some consistency. It should all be logical. All the pieces of the puzzle should fit.
Society is so mobile nowadays, though. So, you know, it's just really you've got to check the time. I mean, they could be from Idaho and have that Social Security number and have their stuff in California. But it's just a matter of really time if they've lived here for 10 years, right? I mean,
a lot of it's logical. Again, if someone's standing in front of you who appears to be in his 50s, but the driver's license shows a date of birth of 1980, you might want to think twice.
Yeah, good point.
We see that. We deal with fraud all day long on the collection side of our company, at Rent Recovery Service, and we see that constantly where the dates are completely out of whack or the pictures are wrong. Even the race is wrong. We have had people apply that are Caucasian and the picture is not, and vice versa. It's amazing that people just don't pay attention. It's across the board. People just aren't paying attention.
Well, that's certainly the way they've been underwriting loans the last few years, huh?
Same problem.
Yeah.
Same problem. Yeah. Yeah.
No question. Hey, talking a little bit about financing, actually, what's going on? You know, the last 6 months, we have been through turmoil after turmoil, and it has just been a crazy time. I mean, historically, epically crazy. What's going on in the world of financing apartment buildings?
American Apartment Owners Association offers up a lot of mortgage help, and to a certain extent, it's going to vary a little bit by location and the size of the deal, but generally speaking, I think values are a little bit lower, cap rates a little bit higher, and financing has certainly become more difficult to get. But I'd say it's prohibitive, but available. We're seeing more equity being required by lenders. They're certainly more careful in checking out the borrower and probably more than anything, making sure the building is going to be able to support the debt. They're still looking at the creditworthiness of the borrower, but they're really looking more carefully at the building, more so than they used to. Everyone's being more cautious, but we're finding in most parts of the country, money is still available.
Yeah, and what type of money? I mean, it looks like the conduit lending is pretty much gone. Is it all sort of local banks loaning money in their local market? Are brokers doing the business? Any thoughts there as to where the money's coming from?
Well, again, I know we have some brokers listed with us that are very eagerly helping people, and they're closing some loans. So I know that's happening. I'm not too involved in those loans myself to tell you if they're coming from local lenders or coming from other forms. I mean, I know construction lending is even being done on some new construction in a couple parts of the country. I've heard of some loans going through there. In fact, there was an article in Apartment Finance, I think, last month, talking about construction lending for apartments for new construction. So we're seeing some loosening up, some available money, but I think they're looking at 15-60% loan-to-values, which definitely is conservative.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's for construction, though, right? I mean, not for an existing building that's stabilized.
Well, I think existing they're going a little better, obviously, but they're looking more carefully at the building, the rent rolls,
right,
the condition of the property, the overall neighborhood. And more everyone is concerned with foreclosures that might be coming down the pike in that neighborhood to make sure that that doesn't further lower the value of the building that's being considered for finance. I mean, everybody's a little concerned about values going even lower.
And, of course, that all depends on the geography and what that market's doing.
Right.
What are some of the differences, Jeff, in terms of, you know, apartment investing versus residential versus retail versus office versus industrial? Why apartments?
I've owned a few office buildings and a couple thousand apartment units and a little bit of industrial, so I've sort of had my fingers in those different pies over the
uh-huh.
years. Clearly, if you're looking at commercial property, the key there is to have a very strong tenant. And with any of these, it's being in a good location, being in the right neighborhood of the right town at the right time. But you need a strong tenant. Whereas with, at least for me, I always viewed residential income property, apartments, there's some diversification there. You have a larger group of people that you're relying on. So if you do have one vacancy out of a 30 or 40 unit building, it's not going to hurt you too bad. And people are always moving around, so there's always that movement. And if you can provide a better unit at a fair price, you can hopefully compete in the neighborhood. I mean, I've always done well with my apartments, and certainly through the American Apartment Owners Association, even the Fidelity clients, we're always advising them as to do the same. And again, be careful who you screen, and it all helps the bottom line.
Let me take a brief pause. We'll be back in just a minute.
You know, Penny, sometimes I think of Jason Hartman as a walking encyclopedia on the subject of creating wealth.
Well, you're probably not far off from the truth, Rich. Jason actually has a 6-book set on creating wealth that comes with over 100 hours of the most comprehensive ideas on investing in business. They're in high-quality digital download audio format, ready for your car, iPod, or wherever you want to learn.
Yes, and by the way, he's recently added another book to the series that shows you investing the way it should be. This is a world where anything less than a 26% annual return is disappointing.
Jason actually shows us how we can be excited about these scary times and exploit the incredible opportunities this present economy has afforded us.
We can pick local markets that are untouched by the economic downturn, exploit packaged commodities investing, and achieve exceptional returns safely and securely.
I like how he teaches us how to protect the equity in your home before it disappears and how to outsource your debt obligations to the government.
He's recorded interviews with Harry Dent, Peter Schiff, Robert Kiyosaki, Pat Buchanan, Catherine Austin Fitz, Dr. Dennis Waitley, T. Harv Eker, and so many others who are experts on the economy, on real estate, and on creating wealth.
And the entire set of advanced strategies for wealth creation is being offered with a savings of $385.
Now, to get your Creating Wealth Encyclopedia series complete with over 100 hours of audio and 6 books, go to jasonhartman.com/store.
If you want to be able to sit back and collect checks every month, just like a banker, Jason's Creating Wealth Encyclopedia series is for you.
With the issue of the background checks, you mentioned some good red flags there, and I appreciate that. Do you deal on the collection side at all? So say you have or haven't checked someone out, who knows, but now you have a problem. The tenant has moved, they owe you money, they owe you back rent, maybe they've beat the place up a little bit, and you've got to collect money from them. Do you deal with that side of it at all?
Yeah, Fidelity Information, which has a division called Rent Recovery Service, Rent Recovery Service started in 1988, so we're in our 21st year, and we're the largest landlord collection agency in the country. Essentially, that is what we do. We take delinquent tenants that haven't paid, that either skipped out or there's a judgment against them, and we go after them. We're pretty relentless at that and pretty successful. We represent some of the largest management companies in the country, as well as tens of thousands of smaller owners, helping them collect their delinquent rent.
One of the things about looking at filings and so forth when doing background checks is that every local area and every state is really different, isn't it?
Yes. And it's difficult to get complete information all the time. Again, all the more important that the person on the front line, be it the owner or the manager, really be intuitive and cross-check documents. Because when you pull a report from a tenant screening company, be it us or someone else, they're never complete. It's sort of one tool in the toolbox, but it's not the entire picture. We always tell our members not to rely solely on any one thing. But yes, eviction records, although they're real helpful, are never complete.
Yeah, so when someone runs a background check, say they're in Dallas, Texas, are you looking at that person? You're not looking at their nationwide. They could have just been evicted, for example, in Houston. Would it show up within the same state, or it depends, or?
You can order either a statewide or a nationwide eviction search.
Okay. And it really checks every county, I guess the county recorder's office, right?
Take a step back, because there's two types. First of all, there's a handful of counties around the country that don't participate at all. It's not public information, and I don't know them off the top of my head, but there are probably a dozen counties around the country that you can't get the information. So, again, it's not a perfect record. That's number one. Number two, the only thing you're going to really pick up from court records are evictions. And so we have millions of tenants who just skip out owing rent and landlords who do nothing about it. They don't go to court. They're happy to get the unit back. They eat the loss. And those records you're able to get from collection agencies, from Rent Recovery Service and some of our competitors around the country that contribute that information to databases. But again, you're dealing with incomplete records because not every landlord shares the information when somebody skips out owing them rent or damages a unit. But the short answer to your question is you can run a statewide in Texas, or you can run a nationwide.
How much does a background check cost?
Again, it's going to vary depending upon credit checks at AOA, I believe, started around $10, as I recall, and you can spend upwards of about $25 or $30 for a complete package. And keep in mind that most states allow you to charge upwards of $30 or $35 to the tenant. So it's not costing the landlord anything to do that.
Share some of your other wisdom with us. I mean, anything specific, take it where you want to go, just in kind of wrapping up here.
I think there's a lot of opportunity throughout the country for an aggressive investor who, with some long-term view, whether it's in their own neighborhood or seeking out those cities that are having significant problems, I think there's some opportunity. We certainly, through our newsletter, our blog at American Apartment Association, and our consultants there, we answer questions all day long and help our members decide where a good place is to invest, go over. We don't give them investment advice, but we certainly will get demographics for them and get statistics for them and that sort of thing to help them.
That's fantastic. Good stuff. Hey, I've got one more question for you.
Sure.
In terms of the collections, after someone leaves the property, they owe you money, is there a sort of a nationwide statistic generally on how much landlords are collecting or how often they're collecting and how often they're not? And are you going to small claims court for them and filing and actually getting a judgment, or are you sort of like collecting through just sending letters and putting it on their credit report? Can you sort of give us the spectrum there?
Well, overall, delinquencies are up, of course, in this economy. We're getting more files sent to us than ever before, and it's harder to collect than ever before because so many people are unemployed. Specifically, as to your question, they go in two directions. Either they send us a judgment because they've evicted someone, they get a judgment for remuneration, a money judgment for back rent and legal fees. And in that case, we report to the credit bureaus. We do not send letters. We do not make phone calls. We go directly after their assets and we take them. We do automobile repossessions. We do bank levies. We do wage garnishments. We do not send them a letter. We don't give them a warning. If there is no judgment, then we do take more traditional collection agency steps where we do send letters, make phone calls. In some cases, we will file a lawsuit against them if there's something there. We have some clients we do that for. If you have a judgment, you're about twice as likely than a non-judgment to get your money. So we always encourage our clients to get a judgment. If they're going to get an eviction, go through the eviction process, and even if the tenant moves out in the middle, finish up with your eviction and get a money judgment.
And so do you have to serve them, though, to get that money judgment, or can they have disappeared on you?
It's all part of the same unlawful detainer action.
Oh, okay. So they are only served with the unlawful detainer filing initially, and
right,
that can carry you all the way to a money judgment.
Right, even if they don't show up.
Oh, that's great. Good,
right.
Because I would assume a lot of times these people just sort of disappear. Sometimes they're very transient, especially in really low-end apartments, I would assume.
Yes, more often than not, these are default judgments. And the other thing I would always advise is list everyone on the judgment. Typically, we see a lot of roommate situations or boyfriend-girlfriend situations or whatever where one will move out when the rent is current and leaving the other one there to make the rent, and he can't. But the person who's moved out is still responsible, still on the lease. And so we always encourage you to name everyone you can on the judgment when you get the judgment.
Tell me about the localities. And, you know, one of the things we look for, Jeff, is we want to be dealing in areas where the regulatory environment is friendly to our cause as landlords. Places like California and New York, you know, the landlords just have such limited rights. One of the areas we really like is we like Texas. I mean, you know, the old saying, don't mess with Texas. I mean, they can play the game as good as possible, but in 30 days, they're out of that house.
Yeah, and Texas is what we call a debtor-friendly state. So is Florida and Wyoming. Very hard to collect. They're debtor-friendly states. I mean, that's the famous O.J. Simpson moving to Florida. That's why he did it, really.
Because he had the homestead, right?
Exactly. And yeah, very hard to garnish wages in Florida and Texas.
Well, Wyoming Texas doesn't do garnishments, I know.
That's right. Can't do it.
But the nice thing about Texas is at least the regulatory climate in the beginning is in your favor. That person is not going to sit there for 6 months like they can in some areas if they, you know, do bankruptcy on you and really
no, you're
know
right.
how to
in terms
play the
of
game.
Possession, much quicker.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. In terms of getting your money back, it's tougher. We have reps both in Houston and Dallas that work for us there, and as well in Florida, and we do collections there. It's just it's a tougher way to go.
For our Masters weekend, one of our property managers from Austin, Texas, was here. And, you know, he's very active in regulatory affairs and also in the property management associations and so forth. He says he gets calls all the time from a tenant. He may not even be representing the owner anymore. The owner may have switched property managers, they're managing their own property, they're sold the property, whatever. But 3-4 years hence, where the tenant will call them up and say, hey, I'm trying to buy a car and get a loan, I'm trying to buy a house and get a loan, they're requiring me to satisfy this judgment that's showing up on my credit report before I can do that. To whom do I write the check?
That's right.
And
we get those calls every day,
yeah.
All day. In fact, we have one of the services we have that Rent Recovery has is a fully automated online reporting system so that a landlord can go online anytime he wants, 24/7, and input a delinquent tenant, and it gets reported directly to all three credit bureaus.
So many landlords, they just kind of let their tenants off the hook and eat losses. Don't do it. You know, you've got to run your properties like a real business. And a business has got to get paid to stay in business. So collect. I mean, if these people skip out on you, get a company like Rent Recovery to go after them and get your judgment, finish the eviction process and make it work. Because these judgments, what do they last for, 10 years and then you can renew them, I believe?
Yes, California's 10 plus 10. Most states, it's at least 10 years.
And they accrue interest, right?
Yes, they do.
So eventually, you're probably going to get paid, and you're going to get paid with interest. I mean, in 20 years, by golly, that tenant has got to do something with their life. I mean, they've got to buy a car. They've got to buy a house sometime. It's a nice surprise gift. It may come 5-6 years later, but...
Absolutely. We get those every day, and people do get back on their financial feet, and they do need to clean up their credit. And they come back to us 5-6, we've had them as much as 18 and 20 years later.
Wow.
And pay the whole thing.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, good stuff. Jeff, this is great wisdom. Thank you for the insights. Give us your two websites for both things that you're involved in.
Well, the American Apartment Owners Association is AmericanApartmentOwnersAssociation.org. I welcome all of your listeners to visit that site. For information on Fidelity Information, which would be Rent Recovery Service, they can go to... either abadtenant.com, and for tenant screen, they go to tenantalert.com.
Tenantalert.com and abadtenant.com.
Yes.
So for those of you who are using professional managers, impart some of what you heard today to your manager. Your manager may already be engaged in all the best practices, but they may not. So, you know, it's incumbent on you to make your manager do the best they can to make sure you get paid. Jeff, thanks so much for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
What's great about the shows you'll find on jasonhartman.com is that if you want to learn more about investing in real estate in different markets, there's a show for that. If you want to learn 17 ways rich people think and act differently, there's a show for that. If you want to know how to get paid to borrow, there's a show for that. And if you'd like to know why Amsterdam doesn't take dollars or why pools are for fools, there are even shows for that. Yep, there's a show for just about anything. Only from jasonhartman.com or type in Jason Hartman in the iTunes store.
This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, all rights reserved. For distribution or publication rights and media interviews, please visit www.hartmanmedia.com or email media@HartmanMedia.com. Nothing on this show should be considered specific personal or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for individualized advice. Opinions of guests are their own, and the host is acting on behalf of Platinum Properties Investor Network, Inc., exclusively.